Welcome to another episode of The Slow Good Life. James Davis here with me in the studio, Craig Marshall.
The Slow Good Life happening again, James. Let's get to it.
Yeah. We're excited to be here. And we've got some interesting guests with us today. We have Deborah Tobola. Deborah is the author of a brand new book called Hummingbird in Underworld, Teaching in a Men's Prison. And we're going to get into that really soon. And Deborah's got a friend here, Tracy Bradbury. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you so much. We're so excited.
Yes, we are.
We're looking forward to hearing about this book and a lot of the great work that you guys have done, you know.
And Deborah, you also are the founding artistic director, we need to say this right up front, of the Poetic Justice Project. Now, I did a little bit of cheating, looked at the website, and folks could Google that, but for people that have never heard of this group before, or maybe just heard a little bit, what is the Poetic Justice Project?
We're the first theater company in the country created for formerly incarcerated people.
Now, these are for people that have actually gotten out?
Right. They've been in juvenile facilities, jail, state prison, private prison, federal prison, any or a combination.
And how did they find out about the Poetic Justice Project? I'm very curious.
One of the actors in our most recent production heard about it when he was in a federal prison in Los Angeles. Sometimes people find out through word of mouth or our presence on the internet.
So both the old, good old-fashioned word of mouth and then digital media.
Yep.
This is fascinating. And I've got to ask Tracy. Tracy, how did you meet Deborah? Where do you come into this story?
Well, through Poetic Justice Project. And I actually was going to a celebration of life of my oldest daughter's Edermutter, Patty Sewell, and met Jorge, who is one of the original actors. And I wanted to get involved. I could not, unfortunately and fortunately, be a performer, which is my background because I haven't been incarcerated.
We can lock you up for a day.
But I did get blessed, and Deborah had me direct one of her shows. It's just very, very passionate.
So you just happened to meet her, heard her story, and the story is what interests you in the work?
I think the project. My extreme heavy background with performing arts and being a professional, actually triple threat for all my life. And my youngest daughter had a journey. And it was a great way for me to, because she's very talented, get some comfort and some help and some guidance. So that's been my passion, is really to just journey of my youngest daughter. And then Deborah and I have been friends for years.
Yes.
And so you're passionate about drama and expression, and this is a vehicle for you not only to give to, but a release, is what you're saying.
Yes, absolutely.
How many productions have you done? I see that the Poetic Justice Project was started in 2008. Is that correct?
The beginning of 2009.
Nine, okay.
Yeah. 18 productions.
18.
More than 100 actors.
What's some of the names of the productions we would know? I mean, is there a wide variety of different types of plays and musicals? And
yes, Blue Train, Off the Hook. We usually do original, but we did do Of Mice and Men and took it to the Steinbeck Festival. We've done The Exonerated, the year that Californians were voting on the death penalty. Our most recent play was Crossing the Line, and Tracy helped me out with some other ones.
Do you perform these plays all over California?
We have traveled quite a bit. We've been on Alcatraz 5 or 6 times, have performed in L.A., Sacramento, Fresno, Bakersfield, Tehachapi,
Mammoth,
San Diego, Hollywood.
Wait a minute,
Mammoth,
you've been to more prisons than Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash did Folsom and San Quentin.
No, these weren't prisons.
No, that's right. These are for prisoners that were incarcerated that are out.
Yeah.
Now, do you find that a lot of the performances are near areas that have prisons?
Not hard to do in California.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Especially
prison industry.
It's really true.
Yes, especially the Central Valley.
Isn't that telling?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is like an extension of the work you've already done. You taught creative writing in prisons, correct?
In theater, yeah.
In theater in the prisons. You did that for many years, right?
Right.
California, the men's colony and other places? Or,
yes.
Yeah.
I started in 92 at CCI in Tehachapi.
Now, Deborah, was that after you'd already obtained your degree, a Master in Fine Arts?
Yes.
What led you or made you decide to choose that path?
I've got two answers. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the night I was born, well, my dad was in the Korean War, and then he was on the GI Bill going to Cal Poly. I was on the way. He got a job at CMC as a guard and kept it until he graduated.
Yeah.
So the night I was born, he was chasing an escaped convict and missed my birth. And then my first meal away from home was at CMC in the cafeteria, where I love to tell the story. I said, "Daddy, I like eating at the joint." So in a way, I came into this world with that. Okay,
that's an interesting background, yes.
But then I got my master's, and I imagined I would be teaching in a college or a university full-time. But I moved back to California, and the budget, you know, was increasingly going to the prisons, not universities. And then I happened to move to Tehachapi, a prison town. So I went there and taught creative writing, loved it, stopped teaching as an adjunct faculty member in college, and haven't looked back.
Focused on prison full-time as far as teaching.
Right.
Now, currently, Deborah, you're working with CMC primarily?
Yes.
And so you do work in the prison, and then you do the drama work outside.
Correct.
Do you ever have crossover where some of the people that you work with inside get involved in your programs?
Well, I hope we can talk to one of those people today, actually.
Well, let's, you know what? Let's, I think we have some interviews coming up here. Let's go ahead and ring our first interview, I believe, is with Opie.
Right. But the person that who worked inside prison with me, with theater, and then.
Yeah.
Then with Poetic Justice Project is Denny.
And that's our last interview. Well, let's call Opie right now and see if we can get him on the phone.
Okay.
Hey, I think we've got Opie on the phone. Opie, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Opie.
Opie, you're in the book. I think Deborah's got some questions for you.
All right, great, great. Thank you for calling.
Yes. So you're in the chapter where I ask you to go to the Blue Building to make copies of poems.
And yes, yes, I remember that.
Can you tell us what happened when you were there?
Yes, I remember that. This is a while back, but let me see. Well, first off, it was really neat to be tasked with something like that. It, you know, to run an errand across the yard, it kind of reminded me of high school a little bit. I was in, student government. So it kind of made me feel like that again. It was sort of liberating that I could roam freely on the yard and I was, you know, doing something neat, like running a task like that. So anyways, I got to the Blue Building, and if I recall, there was some copies that needed to be made of a poem. And when I brought it in there, you know, I couldn't just go to the Xerox machine. I had to hand it off to someone with a permission slip, just like in high school, like the pass. And if I recall, there was an officer that, you know, got the poem and read it and kind of grumbled, and might've said something, you know, I think, Miss Tabola, Deborah, she put it accurately in the book. They said something and it ruffled my feathers. You know, I thought here I was on this benevolent mission, you know, and I thought that they were all kind of friends, you know, that, that the that the cops, the COs were, you know, they were in favor of the program. I thought, you know, that they'd be like, oh, this is great. Let me print this off for you. I didn't expect them to, you know, to give me the attitude, I guess what it was. Wow. And if I recall, it was, the poem was something about redemption, which was ironic there, you know, the irony there was there. But I came back to the office and told Miss Tabola about it. And she, you know, that's when I kind of realized that maybe they weren't all good friends, you know, that she wasn't super close with the COs, or, you know, there's something going on there that I didn't understand. So I told her what happened, and you know, then her and I kind of laughed about it. And I think it seemed like maybe she was more perturbed by it than I was. You know, for me, I was surprised, but I thought, well, of course I got that, you know, the cops never did like us or like me or whatever. But yeah, that's the way that it was portrayed in the book, which I've read the book, loved it. That's pretty much how it went down, you know, and that's when her and I connected at that point.
This wasn't an eye opener. It was an eye opener for you. You thought they were all on board, but for you, it was not an eye opener, Deborah. You understood some of the politics behind your program.
Yes.
In a short answer, yes.
Yes. Pretty complicated. But I just wonder if Opie could tell us something about how the arts made a difference while you were locked up and then after you got out.
Sure. I would love to. I would love to. Hopefully I won't talk too much. But basically, you know, the whole thing, the whole experience with Arts and Corrections for me was really magical. I always wanted to be a poet, or always did write poetry, always wrote. I wanted to be a novelist. And when I got into prison, you know, I sort of forgot all that in a sense. There was a period of, like, I guess the best way to put it is sensory deprivation. You know, it's like, you know, I just remember being in Central California prison in Delano, and it's just this big dusty flatland, and there's nothing but like heat and glare and just emptiness and concrete and men's faces and men's body parts. You know, that's all you saw. And then when I got to California Men's Colony, you know, it was a little bit nicer, a little bit better. But one day there was just this thing on the wall that said that there was going to be some poetry. And I couldn't even believe it. I'm like, you know, just the fact that there was a flyer on a fence, on a chain link fence, that was, to me, it almost, like, that was almost art. You know, I think it was even on colored paper.
Yes.
So it was something magical, and I signed up for that. To give you a broader example too, just when I would go to the library at the very beginning, before that I even knew about Arts and Corrections, you know, when you would open up a book and there was pictures in it, you know, and those are just pictures of, say, movie posters or pictures of like Frankenstein's face, I remember, just things. It was neat. I mean, you just, because you're deprived of so much. So when you would see these things, you know, it was like this new world would open up, and you felt, I guess, human or something, you know, something more, maybe like a kid again. Well, with the poetry deal, and Ms. Tabola offering that, you know, for me, it was the neatest thing, because there I was wanting to be a poet. I couldn't really ever write. Any paper I got would go to my letters home and stuff. I was indigent, and it wasn't like they were handing out papers. You know, I guess they're afraid we would smoke them. You know, I don't even know what, but it wasn't that easy to get material to execute any art. So when I saw that there was Arts and Corrections, and that there was this poetry thing, and I signed up for it, and I went to the class, I even wrote it in a letter. I still have that letter I wrote about it. But it was so neat to meet this lady in prison who was, you know, human. This is, of course, before she hired me. And it was this escape from the yard, and it gave me hope again. You know, it gave me something to strive for. So I went back, and I remember writing a whole bunch on my bunk at night. And then I think I heard there was a position open, and I talked to Ms. Tabola, or she sent, I think, a pass out to me, and she said, "Hey, you know, let me see what you're writing. I need a creative writing clerk." So that was the first time actually in my life that I let anybody read my poetry. And I gave her what I had, you know, and it was just stuff I had written in the past couple of days, jotting down from memory things that I had lost in the past or whatever. Because when I went to prison, I lost all my writings. I lost everything. So, and for me, it was a really neat experience, because I could connect. I connected with someone. It wasn't like I just kept it in my head anymore. I put it on paper. I let her read it, which I couldn't believe I did that. And then she hired me, and then she said, you know, write stuff, and I'll critique it, and we'll talk about it. And so we did that, and it really empowered me. It gave me, it was more than hope at that point. You know, it gave me purpose. And when I paroled, I only worked with her for a short time, but when I paroled, man, it was, I had purpose. I wrote a whole bunch, and that propelled me, you know, into my life and, you know, into the future. And then, of course, there was a period, you know, things were got a little bit maybe dark for me, a little sideways. Maybe I should have got a little bit of help when I got out of prison, not just, you know, just get a job and go at it. Maybe I needed a little bit more. Well, anyways, the crazy thing is fast forward 15 years later, and I'm at the darkest point of my life. It's like much darker than prison. And I started writing poetry again. And I reached out and I found Miss Tabola, and she, I gave her what I've been writing, and she's now my writing coach. And that saved my life. So it almost like saved my life in prison, and then it saved my life when I got out of prison. And now I have a book published, and I'm publishing another one. I'm working on a novel, and I'm letting, you know, Miss Tabola read it. I'm reaching out to people. You know, it's a way for me to connect.
Opie, what a powerful story.
Yeah, Opie, I really liked how you said arts equals hope, obviously in this life scenario, but universally. It really does. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah, that was absolutely excellent. We really appreciate it. And gosh, if you told any more of the story, people would not go get the book.
Huh.
No, actually, I'm kidding. It really makes me, intrigues me, and piques a lot of interest to see how you fit in and the relationships and Deborah's impact. Thank you for sharing that with our listeners today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Opie.
Deborah, this book is brand new to me. I have not read it yet. I'm excited. But after hearing Opie on the phone, it makes me very interested in some of the other characters that are mentioned in the book and that you'll be calling up next. We've got Alejandro. Could you share a little bit about how Alejandro fits into the book in your life?
Yes. Alejandro is a very gifted poet. My friend Emily in the book taught at CMC, and her students were the under 21 inmates, and he was one of them. She read some of his poetry and sent him down to me at Arts and Corrections, and I immediately recognized his gift and offered him a job. And by this time, Opie had paroled, so I had the opening for a creative writing clerk. And he asked me why he should take the job with me, because he already had two kids, and next door to me was auto body repair, and he could learn a trade and make some money and help support his family. And I couldn't answer him, and I ended up writing a poem to answer him called To a Poet in Prison. So the next time I saw him, I gave him the poem, and he took the job.
Wow. Let's go ahead and call Alejandro right now and talk to him, introduce him to our audience.
And I have to tell you, too, he was deported to Mexico after his sentence was completed.
Yeah.
Because he came over as a baby, and when he went back, he did not know the language or really anyone there.
So we'll be calling him in Tijuana today, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Alejandro is a very gifted poet that I had the opportunity to work with in 2001 at the California Men's Colony. And part of why I love this work so much is I think I learn as much as my students, and just engaging in the arts in this way is such a rich and deep gift in my life. And especially with Alejandro, I ended up visiting him after he was deported and learned his whole story. He's someone I admire very much. And he's in, I think, three chapters in this book.
Wow. Alejandro, welcome to The Slow Good Life.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. And Alejandro, Do you remember when you first met Deborah?
Yes, I do. I was introduced to her by another teacher who caught me writing a poem on one of her computers instead of doing, you know, her classwork.
We won't tell anybody.
Yeah. And then I thought I was in trouble, but she said she wanted me to meet somebody, and that's how I met Mr. Bola.
And so it actually turned out to be a positive turn during your time of incarceration.
Yes, no one with my background had ever had a job like the one I had working for Mr. Bola. It was something rare and out of the ordinary.
What exactly did you do, Alejandro?
I would write and work on the place with the team, with Mr. Bola, and whatever other artistic activities we had going, I would get involved with that.
Wow.
And I was later the poet laureate.
Wow. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it was.
So, Alejandro, how did having the arts in prison affect you or your incarceration?
There's a lot of opportunities. There's more opportunities to get in trouble than there is to not get in trouble. And the arts program gives you that one option, you know, to like do something creative and something that is positive. And if you choose to like, you know, to go to arts and correction activities and stuff like that, then you're actually giving yourself an opportunity to not be involved in other stuff that's going on the prison ground. So it was a big impact on me and my time and my life.
Hey, let me ask you this. Getting into the arts in prison, did you get any flack from any of the other guys in there as far as you're not hard? What are you doing, man? I mean, did you get any of that in prison?
I did, but it was more in the sense of teasing me.
Okay.
It wasn't in the sense of something like serious, because they knew I wasn't a, so they knew that, you know, they can probably tease me, but it didn't go past that. And yes, I did get a lot of comments and stuff like that from the guys I hung around with about working in arts and corrections.
I'm just wondering, Alejandro, you're mentioned three times in the book or three different chapters, so you're like very much a focus here. We're going to have to read this and check it out, but I'm just trying to get a sense. Deborah was talking a little bit about the impact of the arts after you got out, after incarceration.
Yes, the arts has been, I mean, I've been involved in arts programs. I've been, I mean, in and out of jail since I was like 14 years old. And one of the things that impacted me the most is the arts programs that coincidentally, you know, came into my life at the right moments. And I know it was probably like ups and downs as I escalated to go to prison, but the simple idea of somebody caring for me, or someone, you know, like going out of the way to provide something that they don't really need to provide, as in like arts and arts programs, that really made an impact on my life. You know, that really changed everything, and it's helped me succeed here in Mexico.
Do you still write poetry, involved in some dramatic things, some creative endeavors?
I do. I work with my daughter. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she just finished writing her first book story.
Wow.
And I'm writing a book right now that I'm almost done with, like, the first draft. And as far as poetry goes, I write a poem once in a while about what's going on.
Somebody that's hearing a little bit about your writings in the future, can Deborah put those up on a blog post on her website? Some updates?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah, sure. She's got several of my poems, and she can put them up whenever she wants to.
And Deborah, your website, for anybody that wants to check it out right now?
DeborahTobola.com, and that's TOBOLA.com.
And then the other website of the organization?
PoeticJusticeProject.org.
PoeticJusticeProject.org. Alejandro, thank you for being our guest today on The Slow Good Life. We appreciate your time, and we appreciate your story, man.
Yeah, we wish you a lot of success in the future and a lot of luck, my man.
And I want to just say,
Thank you.
Before you leave, Alejandro, some of your writing is in my book, and it's beautiful, and thank you for allowing me to put it in there.
Excellent.
No problem, Mr. Bola. Thank you for everything you've done as well, and thank you guys for reaching out to me.
Thanks for sharing your story,
thank
man.
You. Yeah, blessings.
Deborah, our next caller is a man that's mentioned in your book also, named Denny. Could you tell us a little bit about Denny before we get him on the phone?
Denny Gray worked for me in 2007, and he's barely in the book, but he's going to have a big part in the next book, which is titled On a Wing and a Prayer, The Poetic Justice Project Story, because he started acting in prison in my program, paroled, join Poetic Justice Project, and I'll let him tell you the rest.
Denny, welcome to The Slow Good Life. Really good to be introduced to you, sir.
Good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right. It's great to have you on here. And we've heard some other stories already about the connectivity of the arts in prison from, I guess you could say, the motherly prison arts guru and friend, Deborah yeah. Tabola. So we're glad to have you on the line, Denny, to tell your story, too.
Yes, I appreciate it. You're speaking on a great lady, that lady right there. She's very helpful. She's very helpful. She has assisted so many people. I can't count on either hand. I need five or six.
And you call her with affection, Miss T.
Yeah, Miss T. I've known her for so long now. It's like this was my boss, and this is also my friend. This is someone who I care deeply for. She helped me change. Mm. I'm gonna be perfectly honest. She helped me change.
Okay, Denny, tell everyone the wonderful audition that landed you in theater in prison.
Wow. Well, I came to your place of employment, we shall say, and I came to audition for a part. The guy's name was Little Richie. And, you know, I've never done acting before, ever. Never went to school, none of this. But when I came, I guess it was something that Miss T seen in me. I don't know. I guess it was from the reading. And I really didn't get a chance to do the reading. I read a couple of lines and she said, "You're hired." I'm like, okay, but I'm not, you know, I'm not finished going. And she was like, "That's all right. You're hired. I see something." And it was something in me that I didn't even see. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I never thought about acting, never thought about doing none of that. My path in life was totally different. But she changed that.
Okay, so I want to just fast forward to your paroling.
Wow.
I don't know how I found you, but we were doing Off the Hook, right?
Yeah, I paroled. I came home probably like 2008, 2009, and that's when she was telling me that she was paroling. she was leaving the prison to start PJP. So we started doing Off the Hook. Was a 10 city prison town tour. We went to each town that had a prison located in it. So we went up from San Diego all the way up to Redding, California. And I, wow, yeah. She had me, she makes you believe that you can play anyone. Wow. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
And so what did you play?
She made me play a snitch.
But I told you when I was pitching it to you, you're going to be a snitch, but everyone's going to love you. You'll be a lovable snitch.
The Robin Hood of snitches.
and I was the Robin Hood of snitches, and that was the thing. I was the Robin Hood of snitches, and that was just the funniest thing about it, because I didn't think that anybody would you know, I'm like, who's going to like a snitch?
But they loved him. And Denny is so good. This is how good he is. We were doing Mice and Men, and we kept losing a certain character, actor,
yeah.
and
yeah.
it's not that easy to find African-American men, you know, who have want to be in a play mm-hmm. on the Central Coast. So we're on the way to the Steinbeck Festival, and the Steinbeck family is going to be there. And I called Denny, and I go, please, you got to help me out with this. I emailed him the script. He memorized it on the train.
Wow.
On the way.
Wow.
He walked into that rehearsal. He knew every line. And he learned his craft in prison. I'm so proud of
Woo-hoo!
Him. And he knocked that role out of the park.
Well, you certainly do sound like you just ooze personality through the phone. So, I mean, acting would seem, to, just by listening to you, my man, would seem to come natural. So that it's great that Miss T got with you to bring all that out, you
but,
know?
But yes. we're not done because yes. then he ends up with his own TV show. Tell
what?
Us about that.
What? Oh, what? Yeah. What's happening here now? We've been upstage, Craig. We got to get out of podcasting into television. What's this all about, Denny?
Okay, well, again, this comes from Miss T. There was someone that was looking for an actor who was incarcerated, who could really play this part of Marcus Williams, who I play. He spent 30 years in incarceration, and 20 of that was in the hole. And it was a guy, Mr. Ramon Hamilton, and he was looking for it. He has starred in the TV series LAX, mm-hmm. and he's a great writer, producer, and he was looking for a guy, and he just so happens to call Miss Tabola. I don't know what it was. It was fate, and he started explaining to her. Who he was looking for, and if she had anyone to fit the criteria. And before he could say that, she was like, I got a guy.
And, wow, that's pretty cool. You talk about networking.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well,
he called,
amazing,
he called me because he wanted someone who had really experienced that. And he said, I could have called so-and-so, but I'm calling you first. And I said, I have the guy. And I knew Denny had been in the hole.
Yeah.
I didn't know how long because we had talked about that before. And they auditioned him and they stopped auditioning people.
Denny, what was that like for you, sir, playing an incarcerated prisoner after being out of jail, out of confinement, and then playing that in a dramatic TV series?
TV?
A web TV series.
Okay.
It's called The Hole. It was, I'm going to be perfectly honest. It was sort of kind of scary in the beginning because, you know, I had to draw up on my time being in the hole. And, you know, we were actually in a real prison with a real door, and the door had got locked one time during filming. And man, I almost hyperventilated up in there. I was going crazy. Mm. It was like, cause this is real. You know, even with the cameras in my face, even with all that, this is actually real. And I just drew up on the things that I knew from being in a hole, from being incarcerated, and I tried to project that onto the screen. You know, hopefully I did a great job. I mean, we went for series two, so we're looking right now to do series three. So,
well, Denny, yay. Congratulations on your perseverance, your talent, and also for just sharing your story with us today. And in the future, it'd be great to see some pictures and some links up on Debbie Tabola's website. Debbie, for our listeners, what's your website?
Deborah Tabola, TOBOLA.com.
And then the website for the Social Justice Project.
PoeticJusticeProject.org.
Make sure I get that right. PoeticJusticeProject.org.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to getting some more information and some updates, Denny. And
yeah, Denny,
man,
wishing you success in the future. I mean, it sounds like you're on a path to more and more roles. I really hope that the light continues to shine on you, my man.
Yes, I appreciate it. I thank you. I really have to give thanks and honor to Miss T. I promise you, this would not have been possible without Miss T. She is very, very important to me and my growth, and I appreciate her. I'm very thankful.
Thank you for being a part of her life and a part of the book.
Thank you. You gentlemen, enjoy your day. Love you, Miss T.
Love you too.
Well, Deborah, these guests this afternoon have been fascinating. And we're talking once again with Deborah Tobola. And the book is Hummingbird in Underworld, Teaching in a Men's Prison, a memoir by Deborah Tobola. Deborah, the cover is fascinating. You've got this beautiful orange flittering hummingbird right in the center. It's in the title. Where did this title and the image come from?
The title is actually from a poem of the same name, Hummingbird in Underworld, and it's about creating art in prison. So I thought that would be a good title for the book.
Now, do you feel like the character, a hummingbird in Underworld?
Maybe. I mean, I kind of flit around.
Yeah. I can see that. You have energy, you have focus, you have passion. And my gosh, hummingbirds have all three of those things. Mm-hmm. And what a great picture for the cover. Did you have a friend come up with the picture?
No, the publisher did the cover design, and I love it.
Perfect.
And that happens to be that turquoise is my favorite color. And I was just like, oh, yes.
Deborah, when people go to Amazon.com, they can just put in either the title, Hummingbird in Underworld, or the name Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Tobola, T-O-B-O-L-A, and they'll come right up with this book, right?
Right, and it's also available at Barnes & Noble, independent bookstores, Walmart, Target, and on my website.
Hey, it's been awesome to have Opie, Alejandro and Denny call in, but I did want you to touch real quick on a couple of the other guys, characters in the book. I see Razor, the roughneck who subscribes to the New Yorker. You've got the charismatic Green Eyes, who really has blue, and Doo-Wop, the singer known for the desserts he creates from prison fare. So there's a variety of all kinds of different characters.
Right, and I also alternate between my work in the prison and my own story. So that.
And Deborah, it seems like their lives are being impacted, but my gosh, the impact in what you've received. A little bit earlier, Tracy was sharing about how beneficial this to her. But in closing, what does this mean to you, if you could sum it up, the work that you do and the impact that you're able to see?
Well, I love this work. It enriches me. And as Tracy knows, with Poetic Justice Project, we perform and then we have an audience talk back. And, you know, people's lives change on both sides, audience and actor. And to be able to witness this repeatedly is a great gift in my life.
The audience talk back is fascinating. You don't see a lot of that in social media. And so that's interactive. At the end of the performance, where they can connect and ask questions,
right?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I gotta say, you know, I go back to the arts equals hope, and what a fantastic person you have and have been to shine a light on the arts in such an important way for society. I mean, you know, it's a bit overwhelming, actually, a little bit. I mean, it really does. The human connection really does come into play here. I mean, it's really awesome.
The stories and the impact of lives is just what I am going away with. Really impressed is too small of a word. I guess I'm touched. I guess it's hit me today. Your work and the people's lives, both incarcerated and also those that are out and have made it and are telling the stories and living those stories. Deborah, thank you so much. Tracy, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks.
Once again, PoeticJusticeProject.org and DeborahTobola.com, DeborahTobola.com.
It's the slow good life.
Bravissimo.
What a close.